afternoon, everybody. Welcome inside ESPN Studios. You're listening to the Spencer Wilson Show. I'm your host, Spencer Wilson, and joining me, as always, on the board is Mr. Sean Cloud.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Oh, so much to get to.
So much.
So many good things, so many fun things going on in sports right now. We're going to start where we always do, of course, and that is locally, because Nevada, if you haven't heard, I mean, how have you not if you're living in Reno? Because Nevada's going bowling. Nevada will take on Arkansas State in the Nova Home Loans Arizona Bowl. Nevada back in a bowl game for the first time since 2015 when they beat Colorado State in the, hey, look at that, the 2015 Arizona Bowl.
Look at that.
How fun. They won 28-23 over Mountain West foe Colorado State. And so while Nevada is going back to a bowl game for the first time in a few years, Arkansas State is headed to their eighth straight bowl game.
Wow.
Yeah. The team is 8-4 this season. So, I mean, that's really been where they've, you know, they've either been 6 or 8 wins. They've never been super high up there in the win column. I don't think they've ever reached 10 wins. But 8th straight bowl game for this team. That's a very good stat to hang your hat on and be proud of. They're 4-3. Or I'm sorry, they're 3-4 in their last 7 games. And then if you're like me and you're kind of wondering what the history may be between these two teams, they ever played before? They have. 5 prior meetings between these two teams. Nevada leads the all-time series 3-2. The first meeting back in 1985, Nevada won 24-23. And then Arkansas State won in 1993, 23-21. Then Nevada went off 2 in a row, and winning in 1994 and 1996, 18-0 and 66-14, respectively. And then Arkansas State won the last meeting between these two in 1999, 44-28 at home in Arkansas. So a relatively close series between these two. Should be fun. If you look at the stats between these two teams this year, also relatively close. Points per game, Arkansas State 31.8, Nevada 32.3. Points allowed per game, Arkansas State 26.4, Nevada 28.1. Which I don't know what the point, I don't know why you even put that in there. Why not just round up? How can you really give up 0.3 of a point?
0.3 yards. 1 point is 10 yards.
No, it's like point. It's like actual point per game, though. Like, you know, it's like a touchdown.
Oh, I don't know.
Or a field goal. Yeah. Either way. So it's been relatively close between these two teams all season. It's going to be interesting to see how they approach each other in this bowl game. I love it being on a neutral site field. I think that is one of the cool things about bowl season, is that it really gets to pit two teams against each other and really see who is better. Granted, this is on the West Coast, so you can see that as maybe a slightly, seeing as how Arkansas State is coming from Arkansas. that's one of the things I do like about seeing these teams operate on a neutral field and really kind of testing each other to see who is better. I like Nevada. I think it'll be a closer game maybe than some are expecting. Nevada, of course, having one less win than Arkansas State this year, but Arkansas State not as tough of a schedule.
They did beat UNLV, though.
That is true. That's very true. And that's kind of a groin shot.
I hate to be the one to say it, but
someone's got to say it because we're still reeling from that here. Both teams 4-1 in their last 5 games. However, Arkansas State is on a 4-game winning streak, whereas, as Sean just mentioned, Nevada had their 4-game winning streak snapped on the road against UNLV. So with the early line coming out, seeing it now, Arkansas State favored by a point. Some saying 1.5. I'm not sure if I agree with that. I feel like Nevada, if they can have that run game operate the way they have, like if you look at like a game against Air Force or against San Diego State or against, really anybody in conference, their run game really, I think, had a really strong conference season and conference showing. But if they can get that run game going again, have that three-headed monster attack Arkansas State, allow Ganji to move around the pocket and let that offense operate like it operated that first quarter against UNLV. If they can replicate that like they had before, I mean, I don't think we had seen it kind of at that capacity per quarter like that before this season. But if they can kind of get that groove back like they had prior in the season in that first quarter against UNLV, I think Nevada could win this game by 7 or 10 points.
I think it's going to be a close game. I think with how Arkansas has played their last 4 games, they've all been -1. They've all been pretty high games, 38-14, 44-16, 31-17, 33-7.
Yeah, blowing teams out.
So it's going to be, you have two powerhouse teams, I feel like, who are going to, you know, show off, and it's going to be really on the defensive side. Can UNR, our Wolfpack defense, hold Arkansas, or, you know, and if they can, then from there, I'd say it's probably like a three. I would go with the 1 point at that point, you know, 1 point, 3 points. That's where I would put it in. I wouldn't say 7-10. I think it's going to be a lot closer than that. I mean, this is, like you said, Arkansas's eighth bowl, right?
In a row. Eighth consecutive bowl game.
First in the past.
First since 2015. So first in the last 3 years. Yeah, they just broke a 2-year bowl-less streak.
So they have that on their side. UNR has that with their pride and everything. Yeah, we can probably do it. I just think that it's going to take a lot of defense to take Arkansas's offense off the board to make it, you know, a closer game. If we can't do that, then it could potentially be a blowout or something. But I agree with the 1 point. That's what I'm trying to say, is I agree with the 1 point spread on that. I think that it's going to be a very close game.
I think the defense will hold up, because I think if you look at most of those, I mean, two of those wins were at home against the University of Southern Alabama and Louisiana Monroe. So I don't feel like those offenses are really going to match up to the power that Nevada has if that run game can operate the way it has in the past. But again, take nothing away from him putting up 33, 44, 38 points. That still takes, you know, takes a team to be competent in order to do that. So it's not that they can't. I just don't think that this defense is going to be overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. I think Coach Norvell and these guys are going to be able to kind of re-lock in off that UNLV loss, especially with the amount of time they've had. I mean, you think about, this game's not happening until December 29th, and they've known about this since, you know, almost a week already. So I feel like the way they can scout, the way they can prepare, I think Nevada's going to have a good showing. I think it could boil down to a point if they play like they played that second half against UNLV. If they're a little sloppier with the ball, maybe not as crisp, I could see it coming down to a point and a half. But if they have a game like they had against Hawaii, mm-hmm, or against San Diego State, or that first quarter against UNLV, easy 10-point win for Nevada. You know who else is winning pretty easy right now, though? The men's basketball team. They just keep rolling. They are now 8-0 on the season after beating USC last Saturday in Los Angeles.
Caleb comes up the near sideline. Left to right. Caleb lobbed to the rim. Slam dunk, Porter for the lead. Bounce pass from Thurman to Caroline to the post. Caroline up and under. What a play. Caroline with a brilliant spin reverse layup. 10-point Nevada lead. Left side, Jazz Johnson for Nevada. Pivots through the defense. Goes through the key. Right side, Thurman. Corner three. Good. Jazz, three ball left wing. Good. Jazz Johnson. Nevada ball after another stop. Caleb, top of the key. Three. Banks it in. Pump fake, and it's 63-46. Steal. Thurman. Tipped. Caroline. Ahead of the pack. Jordan. Slam dunk. Cody near side. 6 seconds. Cody lobbed to the rim. Caroline dunk. With 4 seconds to go. So Jordan Caroline with an exclamation point at the end for USC. 73-61. Nevada by 12. The final score.
So there you heard it there from John Ramey, 73-61, a strong 12-point showing on the road against USC. Of course, Nevada coming off their 14-point victory on the road against Loyola Chicago. So two really, really strong road game showings there. But we were kind of talking before we went on air here. Most of those highlights are from the second half.
Yeah, the first half was really neck and neck. They were pretty even on everything. I mean,
I feel like that's because Nevada kind of had that trademark slow start a little bit. I mean, mm-hmm, if you see the way they played in that second half, they were trailing by one, and to see them outscore USC the way they did in that second half, was it 39-26? Nevada outscored USC in the second half. So it's just that slow start factor again for Nevada. Not that it's really hampering them at all. They've overcome it the couple times. I think this is the first or second time they've had a half this year. So it's not really that it's holding them back. It's just that for this team to be really taken seriously this whole season when it comes to Duke, when it comes to Gonzaga, I feel like you got to erase that fast start. You got to really come out of the gate, flex your muscle early, and show kind of the way you can play, that you are a top, not to say that they're not a top five team, but really kind of put that stamp on it, that you're not just going to stay at five. You're going to continue to go up, and you're going to make your case for that number one seed come tournament time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I agree with that 100%.
Wise nods, yes. And of course, this whole team just playing really well. Jordan Caroline doing Jordan Caroline things. He led the way with 24 points and 11 rebounds. And then Cody Martin just flipping the rock everywhere, racking up 7 assists in that game. So a very strong start from Nevada. An 8-0 start for the second season in a row for the Nevada Wolfpack. Just more notches on the belt for Coach Musselman and what he's done with this program. But a second straight 8-0 start.
I love it.
I mean, it's fantastic.
It's a lot of fun. I have a friend that I talk sports with, and he goes to almost every single UNR home Wolfpack game.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and we were talking yesterday, and he's like, can you believe this? I was like, can you? And he's like, oh, this is amazing. This is the best. And we were just talking constantly and, you know, talking about how Jordan Caroline he was a Mountain West player of the week again. All these different things are happening with the UNR Wolfpack. Everything's going great for them. All I can hope for is just that they just keep striding on, just keep powerhousing everything down, keep going, you know, Musselman, keep everyone in check. Everyone keeps shooting threes. Those dunks, that was the best part. There were so many dunks in that game.
Yeah.
So many.
They seem to really enjoy that alley-oop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which I think all of us do. That's one of the best plays in basketball right there.
I mean, just to make it in is a great play. I can't even make it in the hoop. I've sat there and tried, trust me.
So like we said, second straight 8-0 start. Nevada has won all 8 games by double digits this year, as well as out-rebounded all 8 opponents. So that right there speaks of dominance. The Pac women's team still trying to find their rhythm after losing both of their games at the Lady Grizz Classic last weekend in Missoula, Montana, losing to UC Davis 68-84. In their opener, then to Northern Illinois 69-98. But there is a bit of a silver lining in all of this. Teray Briggs was named to the all-tournament team after scoring a team-high 22 points against UC Davis and then scoring 19 points and grabbing 10 rebounds against Northern Illinois. So hats off to Teray Briggs. That is very exciting for her and really just a way for Nevada to find some positive coming out of this tournament. Because, yeah, you lost both, but your star player is still shining. You're still staying together, and you're still just playing hard. And that's all. To compete is half of it. So you're doing that. It's all going to come together. We know that because we know Coach Amanda Levins is going to get this program tip-top shape and just firing on all cylinders. But not the only thing going on in PAC sports right now. Actually, that is pretty much all that's going on in PAC sports right now, seeing as how men and women's golf, men and women's tennis, and rifle team still on winter break. However, the swim and dive team is back in action tomorrow in Boise, Idaho, to take on our blue and orange rivals, the Broncos, in a dual meet. And fun little side note, Nevada's still undefeated in dual meets this year at 4-0 on the season. So, you know, maybe check the website, see how they do. Follow along if you know how to. Probably through the website, that might be a good place to check. But, you know, support Nevada Athletics. But that's pretty much all that's going on in Nevada sports right now. Looking forward to the men's game. And, of course, don't forget that Nevada men's basketball plays Arizona State tonight in the Basketball Hall of Fame Classic at the Staples Center. You can catch that right here on 94.5 FM. Tip off at 9, pregame with John Ramey at 8:30 p.m. When we come back from the break, we're going to have head coach of the Reno 1868 FC, Ian Russell, on the program over the phone. So stay tuned for that. This is the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM. All right, welcome back to the program. Joining me now on the phone, head coach of the Reno 1868 FC, Ian Russell. Coach, thank you very much for joining me. And first off, congratulations on all the success that you and the team had last year, making the playoffs and getting that first win. How's that feel to get that first win under your belt?
Yeah, it's kind of, you know, we had a really good year our first year, got to the playoffs, lost in the first round, so coming back the second year and getting that playoff win really, really helps. And I think it's going to give us good experience going forward to realize what we need to do in the playoffs.
And now you guys going from postseason to offseason, you've already made several announcements. One of those being that the leading scorer of last year, Brian Brown, will be returning to the team. What kind of comfort does that give you, or freedom does that give you, knowing that you don't have to go out and find another star player like that? You already have that in Brian. Now you just need to go out and find some other guys to attribute to this offense.
Yeah, you know, re-signing Brian's really big for the franchise. He had such a great year last year, and we expect him to do the same this year. So, yeah, you're right. It gives you a little bit of comfort knowing you have when your striker's coming back to score a lot of goals. Now it's just a matter of, you know, finding some partners for Brian and just, you know, scouring and finding those players.
And in that process, do you and your assistant coaches kind of split it up? Like one takes the West Coast or the East Coast, or how do you guys go about kind of finding those players?
We all kind of, we all know the agents. So the agents will present us players. We scout the college. We scout kind of all over the world. So we all kind of divide and conquer that. But when they see someone that they think I may like, they'll, my coaches will present them to me and I'll have a look and then we can kind of go from there. But yeah, we're all working together at it.
And so is there a difference between the way you can approach college players and international players? Like, can you bring them in to have an interview with them, or what are kind of the restraints that you guys have to work around?
Yeah, so with the college players, it's kind of interesting because this weekend we actually have a college combine happening. It's in San Jose with the Earthquakes. So I'll be able to look at about 60 top seniors, and then we can interview them there. And then we have the main combine, which is in January, and that's the one in Florida where all the college players in the country, all the best ones, they go down there. And that's where you really get to interact with them. You watch them play, you interview them, you talk to their college coaches, you talk to people that have coached them and get a good idea of their quality, not only on the field but off the field.
And then for international players, would it be a situation where you could bring them in? Because I saw you guys will be hosting open tryouts. Is there a way that you guys would bring them in during that time frame and kind of watch them work out? Or is that more just kind of off of film and conversations prior to them coming to the team?
Yeah, for the international players, there'll be a few of them that will come in for that open tryout. But most of them are just, you're watching film. Like I said, you're speaking to the agents. You're kind of watching their history on how they've done, how they've played throughout their career. And you don't really get a chance to fly them in and actually talk to them. So with international players, it can be a little risky because you don't know their character coming into the team. You know, in the United States, I know most of the coaches, so I can make a phone call and say, hey, how's this guy in the locker room? And I'll get some honest feedback. But, you know, with some of these clubs and in other countries, I don't know the coaching staffs out there, so you kind of do take a risk sometimes signing international players, but you also know there's a lot of quality with a lot of international players, so it's kind of risk-reward.
And with you guys bringing back Brian Brown, similar situation on the defensive side, you guys are returning all four of your starting defensemen from last year. Is that, again, kind of the same scenario with Brian Brown, that you got comfort that you don't have to find anybody to fit in with that group, that you already have that camaraderie?
Yeah, I felt like our defense last year, I thought we had one of the best defensive teams in the league, and to be able to get the starting group back, there's still a couple pieces that I'm looking to sign back there, kind of still working through some negotiations with some players, so just getting depth, and you know, some of those players that I am trying to sign are going to be competing for a starting spot, so it's always competition at every spot is what we're looking to do. So this next year will be no different.
And JT Warzenkowski handled a majority of the goaltending duties last year. One of the backup goaltenders has become a free agent. The other, his option was not picked up. What's kind of the offseason plan of getting somebody to back up JT?
So JT was actually a Earthquakes player, and he was on loan to us. So JT will be signed by the Earthquakes again. So there's a good chance that we will actually see JT again next year if he's not the starting goalie for the Earthquakes.
Okay, and then if he were to stay with the Earthquakes, what would be the next goalkeeper that would step up for Reno?
Yeah, so with the Earthquake situation that we have, we 99% of the time we are getting a keeper from San Jose, which is our parent club in Major League Soccer. So whether it's JT, Matt Bersano, Andrew Tarbell, those are the three keepers that they have right now. We will most likely get one of those keepers. So what I do in Reno is I try to sign a couple guys, and I'm very upfront with them by saying, hey, you can come here as a keeper, but you're going to be our second keeper. And I'll sign another one. I'll say, you're going to be competing for that second or third spot, but I will be getting a player from San Jose. Now, there are times, and it's happened, where injuries have occurred with the San Jose Earthquakes keepers, and we've had to use the keeper that we have signed from Reno. So that's always a possibility. And a lot of players are kind of willing to take that chance to be a part of the organization.
And I'm curious, has there ever been a situation in your coaching career where, I mean, sometimes in baseball you see a pitcher go down, they have to use a position player to pitch. Has you ever been in a position where you haven't had a true goalkeeper on your team that's healthy and ready to go and you need to put either a defender or somebody in there as kind of a quick fix?
No, but I will say our first year there was late in the year the Earthquakes did have a keeper go down, and we were very close to having to use, because it was almost past the roster freeze deadline, and we wouldn't have been able to sign another keeper because our keeper here was injured as well. So we had a couple guys ready to go. Brenton Griffiths was probably going to be the one that was going to be called in to play keeper for us. I'm glad that didn't happen, but I think Brenton would have done a good job. So, but no, that's never happened with my team, but it is a reality, and I've seen it happen.
Yeah, fingers crossed you guys don't have to go through that.
Yeah, I'd rather not, you know, see that happen.
Yeah, exactly. But now going into this offseason, is there any players outside of Reno that you have bookmarked that you'd really like to see to come to the biggest little city, or has it not been whittled down that far yet?
Yeah, well, we've made one pretty big signing. We can't announce it yet, but it's a player, really good offensive player that scored a lot of goals last year. And it's a player from our conference, so I think the fans will be happy when they hear who we've signed. And there's about three or four other really big targets that we're looking to sign here just to make sure we have a really strong competitive team for next year.
Can we get a little idea of maybe when we'll hear that announcement, maybe within the week or?
Yeah, I would say next week we'll be announcing the first signing that we signed from our conference.
I love it, leaving the fans on the edge. I like it.
Yeah.
Any changes to the coaching staff
the
for next?
I think the fans will be actually really happy with this one because it's, you know, it's from a team that they don't like too well anyway. So I'll leave it at that.
Well, there you go. I like it. I mean, we've all been ecstatic with the decisions this team has made thus far. So I'm sure we'll enjoy this one just as much. But any changes to the coaching staff coming up for next year, or will that stay the same?
The coaching staff will stay the same. We're trying to bring in our we hired a sports scientist last year that does works with our analytics, our GPS for our players, and also does a lot of the fitness stuff. So we're hoping to re-sign him because I thought he was a big part of it. So we'll see what happens with that. But the coaching staff is going to remain the same.
And then mentioned earlier, this is still a busy time of year for everybody in the coaching staff, but is there an activity that you enjoy doing during this offseason that kind of helps you get away from soccer for maybe an hour or two that you can just kind of escape to?
Yeah, I like to go fishing. So, you know, Reno, this area is pretty known for that. There's obviously the Truckee River runs right through town. So when I have a bit of time, I'll head out to the river, but I will say it's been pretty cold.
Yeah.
But I still do like to get out there and kind of relax and take it all in.
What's the biggest fish you've ever caught?
Well, in Reno Okay. I used to catch a lot of salmon up there. I caught some like 30 pounders. So
wow.
Yeah. So it's pretty good. But in the Truckee River, caught a couple 18, 19 inch trout, which I think are pretty big.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's great.
Yeah,
well, Coach, I really appreciate the time talking to me. I know this is a busy time of year for you, but good luck with everything in the remainder of the off season, and can't wait to see what this team can do next year.
All right, man. Appreciate it, Spencer.
Big thank you again there to Coach Ian Russell for taking some time to talk with me today. I mean, it's never an easy period for a coaching staff or any coach or manager. Even in the off season, you got to stay busy. I did like the tease there from Coach. That was nice. We got a player signed from a rival, but I can't say till next week. All right, Coach. I see you. I like it. I like the hanging on the edge there. It's very nice. But again, big thank you to Coach Ian Russell, and exciting to see Brian Brown coming back. You heard us talk a little bit about that. Just to add to what this offense has done, 132 goals in their first two seasons is a blistering pace. So just again, tip of the cap to Coach Ian Russell, tip of the cap to this offense and this team, and excited to see what they can do, especially with their college scouting trip and their draft coming up in January. Should be a lot of fun to see what they can do. But I did have a question I meant to ask him that I wasn't able to, because one of the players that contracts expired that became a free agent was forward Antoine Hopeneau. And I was interested to know if they were going to bring him back around, if he was going to be playing somewhere else. Didn't get a chance to ask him. Antoine did have 5 goals and 13 assists last season. So if he hasn't already talked to him, or if they haven't already discussed this, might be worth a discussion. But, you know, that's just me. So take it or leave it. But if you are interested in possibly joining the Reno 1868 team, they will be holding open tryouts next Saturday, December 15th, at the Golden Eagle Sports Complex in Sparks from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. So if you're looking to try out for the club, you are encouraged to sign up at Reno1868FC.com.
Wow.
What do you think, Sean?
I'm not a soccer player, but I'll go try it. Yeah.
Go do it, man.
I'll try anything.
Maybe we can talk Canada Station to like paying us to go out and try it.
That'd be fun.
Getting to be a part of the Reno 1868.
That'd be fun.
That'd be a lot of fun. I'd take getting yelled at by Coach Russell for a day.
Honestly, I want to be the mascot.
Not that I think he's an overly angry person. Just, you know, he's an intense coach. You want to be the mascot?
Yeah.
All right. I could see that. What do you think mascot tryouts is like?
I don't know.
A lot of cheering and spirit, probably.
It's probably like those commercials where they have the mascots jumping on trampolines and stuff, you know. Like back, like 3 years ago, they did it for the college football.
They still do. They still do a bunch of commercials with all the mascots from college football. I feel like it is, you're right, it is like that. They're just doing chores and stuff. Like how much spirit can you organize my desk with?
Yeah.
Let's see you do that.
Yeah, right.
Here's a stack of papers, you know, spiritly stack them. Or restack them. I don't know. This lost a lot of momentum. That's it. Yeah. But again, big thank you to Coach Ian Russell. When we come back from the break, we're talking. Oh yeah, that's right. I got a little ahead of myself because last week we didn't have a giveaway. But Sean, this week, what do we have for the people?
We have a chance for you to win a pair of tickets to see Hootie and the Blowfish with a personal favorite, Bare Naked Ladies, on their group therapy tour Friday, June 28th, 2019 at the Toyota Amphitheater. So there you have it. There's your tickets.
Hootie and the Blowfish for the Bare Naked Ladies goes to caller number 9 right now at 775-333-0945. We'll talk about the senseless murdering of some Jaguars last night on Thursday Night Football coming up after the break. This is the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM. I'm not sure who to call about this, but we should let some authorities know that there was some senseless Jaguar murdering going on last night in Nashville, Tennessee.
Yeah, they went hunting and they did not stop.
Oh my gosh. Actually, it's not just a group of people. It was one man that just went to town last night, and that was Mr. Derrick Henry.
99 yards, everyone.
238 total yards.
4 touchdowns,
oh
right?
My gosh. 4? Yeah, 4 touchdowns on 17 carries. He averaged 14 yards a carry. And just give it to the man.
That's coming from a Jaguars team that held almost every runner this year.
This defense is toast.
Yeah, it's just Jaguars are not good anymore.
7-2 at the end of the first quarter. I watched that and I went, okay, I'm seeing resemblances of what this defense was last year. And you heard, if you were listening to the pregame of the show or the lead up when they go to the two sideline anchors, I can never remember these names. I'm so bad at it, but it's what we know. Yeah, never mind. But
one of the girls' names is Aaron. I know that.
I feel bad now because it wasn't Aaron, so I have to say the other one. I feel really bad having to say the other one, but it wasn't Aaron. I know Aaron Andrews.
Yeah, Aaron Andrews.
It was her. Christina Pink! That was the lady I was trying to remember. Aaron Andrews and Christina Pink. But they went down to Christina Pink, who was standing on the Jacksonville sideline. She said that she had spoken to Jalen Ramsey prior to the game. And she had phrased a certain question like, do you think you're back on form or something like that? And he had responded saying, we never left form. Dude, you left form.
You left
you
a lot of
form. Definitely left form. If you didn't going into this game, you definitely have leaving this game now. 7-2, it was like 16-2 at half. And then pretty much after that, Derrick Henry just said, you know, guys, third quarter, I'm just going to take it and run away with it. 30-9, of course, being the final. Mariota had a fairly good night last night, too.
One interception.
Didn't have a touchdown, but did manage to throw for 162 yards. So, I mean, I feel like Mariota is starting to take on more of a Denver Peyton Manning role.
I agree.
Like, he's not going to be the guy that makes the plays, but he's going to be your field general to the point where he's going to be able to move that team down the field, and then you just give it to Derrick Henry and let him finish it off.
Well, at least this game.
Or at least that game, yes.
Between him and Deion Lewis, you got a running core out there. This game probably relied on running a lot. Next game, maybe not so much. It really depends. But we also never expected this to happen against the Jaguars defense.
Yeah.
A Jaguars defense that, you know, held Pittsburgh's running, held everyone's running. Coming into this, I was running errands yesterday. I turned on the radio just to find out that it was 16-2.
I love that. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, that's what we'll go with.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Either way,
sorry.
16-2, and then at the end, I went at home, turned on my Amazon, watched it a little bit, and I even was just like, there's no point watching this. I have one team where one guy got lucky enough to pick up Derrick Henry and was like, oh, I got 47 points this week. Yeah, lucky you, man. Lucky all of you people who picked up Derrick Henry for this, who just somehow knew this was going to happen. That's my fantasy talk.
Breathe, Sean. Breathe. It's okay. You're going to work through it. We have confidence in you. Titans with a big win this week keeps them well in the hunt. They are pretty much the first team on the bubble right now for the AFC trying to hunt down the Ravens. And the Ravens, oh, they're going to have a fun week. They're at Kansas City. Have fun with that, man.
What do you think's going to happen?
Even without Kareem Hunt, Kansas City is still a dangerous team. We won't talk about Hunt, though. He doesn't deserve to be talked about. But I'm sorry, what were we going to ask me?
How do you think Baltimore is going to fare against Kansas City? I mean, they have one of the best secondaries in the league.
Yeah.
I think Hill's going to be pretty much stuck. I don't think he's going to do much, but Kelsey's going to shine. Spencer Ware off onto the side is probably going to shine. And then they just picked up Benjamin.
Yeah. I think regardless of how well that secondary is, let the secondary be fine. They'll pick apart the defensive line and the linebackers. Mm-hmm. That's what makes this team so deadly and scary, is that Andy Reid will see whatever it is that you're weakest in, like any great coach will. He's going to pick out where you're weakest, and now he's got the star to be like, hey, Patrick, do this, and they won't be able to stop it. And what's he going to do? Not only is he going to do it and execute it, but he's going to do that at the top level.
Mm-hmm.
And just amongst all of that to go along with it, I got two words for Baltimore fans that should already scare them. Arrowhead Stadium is one of the toughest places to play in the NFL. Good luck going in there and beating that team, especially when they're 10-2 right now. Not to say that crazier things haven't happened. I didn't think Dallas would beat New Orleans this year. There you go. I didn't think Tennessee would beat Jacksonville by 21 points. So there you go. But I just don't think that Baltimore is going to have enough to edge out. Although I do think Lamar Jackson has a pretty
the
good game.
Lamar Jackson.
The
Remember
Lamar
that.
Jackson.
Everyone,
yes.
Last week, the Lamar Jackson. I got
Call
a lot
back.
Of rage. Yeah, I love that. I think it's going to be a great game. I do see Kansas City, you know, winning by 10 plus points. I don't see it being fairly close. I see it being a head-on destruction. But I feel like it really could go anyway.
Here's the question with what the results. I'm just going to assume the Ravens lose this week. Mm-hmm. So Ravens go to 7-6. The Titans go to 7-6. Baltimore after that would have the Buccaneers, the Chargers, and the Browns on their schedule, while the Titans would have to fight through the Giants, Redskins, and Colts. So those two teams, those three schedules, or those three games for those teams. Which one do you think that favors more, and who gets that sixth seed? Sean.
It's tough, but I want to say Baltimore gets it, but I'm thinking the Titans get it in the end.
I'm going to say Titans. Okay. I think Tennessee week 17 steals that sixth spot from Baltimore, because guess what? Chargers aren't losing that fifth seed. Ooh.
Yep, not after last week.
Hey, how you feeling, Pittsburgh?
I tried not to jinx that game so hard.
I
was just like, I messaged you. I was like, oh, my God.
He sends me a text in the fourth quarter that just says this game. And I'm going, did he not learn from the first time this happened?
I didn't say anyone was going to win. I just said this game.
And I can appreciate the fact that those refs blatantly missed a false start on the offense. But that was one touchdown. What about that 16-point fourth quarter? Oh, what about that?
It was a game. How do you feel about the Packers, though?
I'm not surprised McCarthy's gone.
Oh, no, not after that game.
I do feel like there was some underlying tension based on how both sides have handled it coming off the firing. But I think the Packers, I mean, listen, Aaron Rodgers is one of those guys that if you allow him to be free, maybe that was the issue. Maybe he didn't feel like he could operate in a McCarthy system. Maybe that had something to do with it. But I think if Aaron Rodgers has the right coach behind him, I mean, he can keep this team in a spot where they can be competitive. I mean, they're out right now. I mean, they're pretty far out on the bubble at 4-7-1 right now in the NFC. But I think looking forward to next year, which is pretty much what you have to do now in Green Bay, I think that I wouldn't be surprised if they're back in the title hunt next year.
Well, I mean, with the coach that they're looking at right now, could be, which is the New England offensive coordinator for Brady. That's who they're looking at, the quarterback coach. That's who they're looking at potentially bringing in to replace him.
And that would be Josh McDaniels. We kind of know that he can be a little flimsy sometimes. He was supposed to have the Indianapolis head coaching job and backed out of that at the last minute to stay with New England. But I could see that. I could see him going there and having success with Aaron Rodgers. I mean, he's obviously had some good, if he's under Bill Belichick, he's had a fairly good offense with a pretty elite quarterback in Tom Brady. So I feel like McCown would know how to structure that offense and probably know how to communicate with Rodgers as well, seeing as how he's had to communicate with Brady the last couple seasons. So that could be a really good fit, and that could really help him. But again, I wouldn't be surprised if they were back in the title hunt next year.
I agree.
Whatsoever. But let's talk about a possible NFC North playoff matchup coming up, because right now the projected third and sixth seed in the NFC is the Bears and the Vikings. That'd be in Chicago. Trubisky supposed to be back this week as who are the Bears playing this week?
Rams.
So not a fun team to really make your
comeback
against. But regardless, Trubisky is supposed to be there this week, so that would help this offense get back into a rhythm. But who would you see would have the edge in that matchup in Soldier Field for the playoffs between Minnesota?
It's a tough one. I'm going to say Chicago. I'm going to say Chicago would beat Minnesota. Their defense is top tier. Not last week, it wasn't, but it's a top tier defense. And with Trubisky back, it's going to be even better than it was. Hopefully he's healthy. Hopefully everything's healed properly. It's good to go. And they're not just sending him back out there because they're like, hey, we need someone out there.
The interesting thing would be if they do end up meeting in the wild card game, they are scheduled to play each other week 17 in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
So they'd be coming off pretty much back-to-back games against the Vikings, which would be the third game. Chicago winning the first meeting this year at home, 25-20 against Minnesota. So that could be interesting to have in a game away in Minneapolis on week 17. They had to come right back to Soldier Field again and play that same team again in a rematch for the wild card round. That would be, I feel like that might go, depending on who wins that week 17 game. Mm-hmm. Like it leans a little towards the Vikings to have that game at home and then go on the road and pretty much take all that momentum with you. But if Chicago can sweep them in the regular season and take that road win and then go back home, I almost think it's a walkover for Chicago, especially right, if Trubisky is back there.
Right. It all depends on that last week 17 game. We'll see what happens. But I'm going to say Bears. I just feel like their offense and their defense is clicking a little bit more than Minnesota's is right now. You know, who is it? Keenan, who's the quarterback over there? Who's the quarterback, or is it Cousins?
For
Vikings, who's
Cousins? Cousins. It's Cousins.
So Cousins has been doing well this season, but not how we expected him to be coming off of, you know, this big buyout and going over there. We expected a lot more. Stephon Diggs is not healthy, you know. It really, the second half of the season is really boiling down to like who's healthy, who's not healthy.
And that's really what it's come down to the last couple years in the NFL.
Yeah. Especially, I feel like this year it's a lot more present with running backs, especially.
Yeah.
Quarterbacks are getting injured.
Position players on the offensive side are really taking hits.
Yeah. It's boiling down. So I'm going to go Bears personally. Even if they lose week 17, I still think Bears would come off with a win.
All right. Well, as we get closer to that playoff, let's talk a little bit about the New Year's Six Bowls, since those have been announced. The first of which, starting Saturday, December 29th, the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl will feature the 10th-ranked Florida Gators out of the SEC and the 7th-ranked Michigan Wolverines out of the Big Ten. I really feel like this is a salvage game for Jim Harbaugh and his status at Michigan. He just lost to Ohio. He still has yet to beat Ohio State on what was supposed to be their quote-unquote revenge tour this season, where they were beating all the teams that had beaten them in prior years in conference play. Still couldn't get over the biggest hurdle, which is Ohio State. So I don't know how you go winless against them in these first few years of coaching. And then, you know, I'm pretty sure this might be their first New Year's Six Bowl appearance under Harbaugh. If it's not their first, it's going to be their second. I mean, he hasn't really been able to take this team to national dominance when it comes to bowl games and postseason. So I feel like you're the better ranked team against an SEC opponent in Florida, a conference that is, I don't think it's arguable anymore. SEC is the college football conference. So you're in a position right now where you're the better seed to go in there and make a statement that you can continue to win these big games to get yourself a little extra time. Because I think if Harbaugh loses this game against Florida, that clock is ticking quicker on his time there. Because I don't think Michigan can really allow their program to fade like this when it comes down to bowl season year in and year out, when they failed to beat Ohio State and really solidify themselves as a playoff contender. Then we move on to the actual playoff games that will be happening that same day, the 29th. The Goodyear Cotton Bowl Classic will feature the second seed Clemson versus the third seed Notre Dame Fighting Irish. Man, I feel like this is going to be a fun game. I feel like both playoff games are going to be relatively fun.
I agree.
I feel like this one might be a little more fun between Clemson and Notre Dame. I just feel like there's something about Notre Dame this year. I like Clemson. I like the way they played in their ACC championship game. But I think the Fighting Irish are going to make their return to the national championship game for the first time since, I believe, 2012, when Alabama rolled them 42-14 off the field, the Orange Bowl.
Wow.
Yeah. Not in the Orange Bowl game, but they were playing in Miami, where the Orange Bowl is located. Speaking of Alabama, they will be playing in the Orange Bowl, huh? Like I meant to say it, as a number one seed against number four Oklahoma. Two Heisman finalists against each other in Tua Tagovailoa, which I hope I pronounced right, or at least somewhat correctly.
Best I've heard it.
There you go. For Alabama, and Kyler Murray for Oklahoma. Man, I hope this game is what it looks like to me on paper, which is a shootout. I know, obviously, the Alabama defense, very, very successful. The Oklahoma defense has been very, we'll say, uneven the last couple years, not knowing how much they're really going to show up. So I feel like Alabama's the favorite, and I think they're going to win. I'm hoping that maybe Oklahoma can pull it off, but I feel like it's Alabama-Notre Dame going to meet in the championship game this year, and man, that'd be a fun one. I just don't feel like there's any real way of stopping Alabama. Who has even come close? Nobody, really. Nobody has really touched Alabama except for Georgia in the SEC championship game, and they did what everybody else has done and just failed to hold Alabama down for four quarters. And there you go. There you have it. I don't think that you can really stop Alabama, so I think that they do beat Notre Dame in the national championship game. But we continue to talk about the other New Year's Six Bowls here quickly, but the PlayStation Fiesta Bowl pits LSU against UCF. The Knights have one last chance to kind of show the world that they deserve to be in the playoff, completing their second consecutive undefeated season. And you have the Rose Bowl game, 9th-ranked Washington against 6th-ranked Ohio State, Urban Meyer's final game for Ohio State before he retires from coaching. As much as I want Washington to win, because I'm a Pac-12 guy, I want to see the Pac-12 succeed, I just think the way that team is going to come out after upsetting Michigan, after winning the Big Ten championship, I don't think Washington's going to have much of a chance. I think Ohio State wins that one. And then in the All-State Sugar Bowl, a good old classic matchup between Texas and Georgia. I think Texas's dreams season does not end very happily. I think Georgia picks up that win. So boom.
Boom.
There you go. Put that in your pipe and smoke it. All right. When we come back, we will talk about UFC 231, the two title fights happening this weekend, and talk a little about instant replay with a little fun fact on that. This is the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM. Welcome back to the program. Real quick here before we sign off, UFC 231 happening tomorrow night. Two championship fights on the line, the women's flyweight championship and the men's featherweight championship. We'll start with the women's flyweight championship. Valentina Bulat Shevchenko takes on Joanna Jędrzejczyk. Man, I feel like both these fights are going to be a lot of fun. I feel like this one's going to be really strike heavy, which always favors those Vegas crowds. But I feel like I'm going to go with Shevchenko. I think Shevchenko gets it in a third round knockout. And then we go to the men's, to the main event, the men's featherweight championship, Max Blessed Holloway against Brian T-City Ortega. Ortega 14-0 with a no contest. Max Holloway 19-3. Kind of the opposite of this one. I feel like it's going to be more of a ground matchup, who can get that kind of edge in the submission game. I think that actually goes to Ortega. So I think Ortega by a fourth round submission takes the UFC featherweight championship.
Any idea what kind of submission?
I mean, he's a Gracie-trained jiu-jitsu artist, so really it could be anything. I feel like Max is going to be pretty intelligent about his head and his neck, so I'm going to say something either with the arms or the legs. Okay. I think maybe gets him. He just cranks to the point where he can't take it anymore. But there you go. That's the show. Thank you very much, everybody, for tuning in. Congratulations to our winner of the Hootie and the Blowfish tickets. I'm sure he's going to enjoy that. Sean was still very, very jealous that he did not get a chance to win those tickets.
Bare Naked Ladies, it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, man. Charlie is so lucky. So congratulations, Charlie. Have a fun time.
Congratulations.
It'll be a great time for everyone.
Army-Navy game this weekend. Tune in for that. The only college football game happening this weekend between Army and Navy. Always a good time. So be sure to tune in to see who wins that. I got a grandfather that served in both the Army and the Navy. Wow. So I just hope for a good game. That's all I hope for. It always is a fun scene when those two get together. But yeah, that's it. And have a good weekend. I don't know. Are we supposed to get more snow?
Snow on Monday. Cold this weekend. Drive safe. Bundle up. Don't get sick.
Have a little fire.
A little cuddle fire.
Get a blanket. Get a nice movie. Some good snacks. And just have some fun. There you go.
That's it.
Peace.